on ABC Local Radio, Radio Australia, and the World Wide Web. This is Sunday Nights with John Cleary.
Hi there, welcome to the program. You can also get us at your personal leisure by podcasting www.abc.net.au/Sunday Nights with an S. We're with you around the world. Well, last week the press carried stories that the Rudd government were considering reviving, with some changes, the Muslim reference group that was formed under the Howard government. Coming in the wake of stories such as community reaction to the proposal for a Muslim school in Camden and the difficulties facing a gym for young Muslims shown on Four Corners a couple of weeks ago, there appears to be as much a problem with some Anglo-Australians as there does with members of the Muslim community. As last year's Cronulla riots revealed, disaffected young people are not unique to any one particular culture. And the issues that give rise to their anger may reveal as much about what they have in common as what divides them. Well, the man in the middle of much of this for the Rudd government is the Parliamentary Secretary for Multicultural Affairs and Settlement Services, Laurie Ferguson. He's also the member for Reid in Sydney, the most heavily Muslim electorate in the country. Laurie Ferguson will be our guest in this hour, and joining Laurie Ferguson will be Fadi Rahman, a young Muslim nominated this week as part of the 2020 Summit 1000, and Anglican priest Father David Smith, perhaps better known as the Fighting Father, for his work with young people in the Dulwich Hill area. And you can join the conversation. 1300 800 222 is the number to ring. 1300 800 222 on Sunday nights around Australia. You'll have to get in early. I'm sure there'll be a board full to take calls with Laurie Ferguson. If you're in South Australia, Northern Territory, give us a ring now. Eastern States, just hold off for a little while. 1300 800 222. In our second hour, another of the 2020 1000, Elizabeth Cham will join us. Long associated with Philanthropy Australia and encouraging generosity in the boardrooms at the big end of town, Elizabeth Cham has much more to share with us and will be with us in about an hour's time. Then, of course, the quiz, a postcard, and in the chat room this evening, it'll be a good welcome back to Father Frank Sheehan. And along the way, of course, a little music. And here's some to begin with. It's the latest from Van Morrison, an album called Keep It Simple. The song, School of Hard Knocks.
I was educated by the School of Hard Knocks. Tell me who's gonna patronize me now. The brand was the suckers again and perpetrated the myth. Propaganda far and wide, no wavelength, no mileage, no currency, no answers, just silence. Yeah, nothing is what it's supposed to be. I was educated by the School of Hard Knocks. Tell me who's gonna patronize me now. I got shipwrecked and got stranded on the rocks. Everybody left me high and dry. Educated by the School of Hard Knocks. Who's gonna patronize me now? Brainwashed the suckers again and perpetrated the myth. Propaganda far and wide, no wavelength, no mileage. got no current currency. No answers on the side. Nothing looks like it's meant to be. I was educated by the school of hard knocks. You're gonna patronize me now. Just got shipwrecked and stranded on the rock. And they left me high and dry. They just left me sitting high and dry. Yeah, they left me.
Van Morrison, School of Hard Knocks. Yes, it's a new one. You can get it at your local CD store if you can find them these days. Well, it's called the NIMBY syndrome, not in my backyard. Yes, I think it's great to have cultural diversity in Australia, as long as it's not too diverse and it's not in my street. It's an attitude with a long tradition in Australia. Australia for the Australians has been caricatured by many groups over the years, but in recent years it's been thrown into greater relief by the arrival of significant numbers of migrants from different religious communities, Buddhist, Hindu, and most recently significant Muslim immigration. Tensions regarding Muslims, however, have been heightened over the association in the public mind with fundamentalism and terrorism. Anyone that looks different is potentially so different as to be dangerous. It's not hard to understand why, but does it create great difficulties for many migrants who of themselves would have no association with the sorts of religion and the sorts of actions that many people are taught to be alert and perhaps even alarmed about? The issues are as difficult for members of these communities as they are for anyone else. Well, it's good to welcome into the program this evening the Parliamentary Secretary for Multicultural Affairs and Settlement Services, Laurie Ferguson. Laurie Ferguson is also the member for Reid in Sydney, the most heavily Muslim electorate in the country. And joining Laurie is Fadi Rahman, a young Muslim who I mentioned earlier has been nominated, one of the elect for the 2020 summit, and Anglican priest Father Dave Smith, perhaps better known as the Fighting Father, for his work with young people in the Dulwich Hill area from his base at the gym and Holy Trinity Church. Welcome to you all. Laurie Ferguson, let me come to you first. There's talk about reviving the Muslim reference group that the Howard government started with much fanfare and then found itself in a bit of trouble with.
Yeah, we're not sure of the form it'll actually take, whether it'll be a set-alone committee or whether it'll be a subcommittee of the Multicultural Advice Committee, but we're inclined to go in that direction. I think that it has positives. Some people say you're just emphasising separateness and difference and perhaps attracting negativism, but I actually believe that not only is it an important sounding board, but it can also represent an opportunity for Australia to understand the diversity of the community. One of the realities is that areas like my own, you're talking about 17 to 20% of residents being of Islamic faith, nationally it's 1.5%, and I think that unfortunately large parts of Australia, you know, they see Sheikh Al Ali on TV, they see an event overseas, and that's the whole perspective they have on Islam. And my message would be that, as with most religious groups, there's a wide diversity, both on a broad community sense, but also individually, that for many so-called Muslims, religion is one of many aspects of their life. It's not the predominant, doesn't dominate their whole existence. They are Lebanese extraction, they are Australian-born, they are in the workforce, they are in sporting clubs. And I just think there's a bit of a belief here that, unlike other religions, the average Australian thinks it's absolutely central, whereas it's only just one of an amalgam of things.
Yes, it's as diverse in its practice and commitment as Christianity is for Australia. There's a certain... Well, it's a bit natural to look at the other as a monoculture, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Rather than representing the same diversity that we have. Does this as much come out of your experience in the local area, having the electorate you have, as it does out of your sort of intellectual experience as a parliamentarian?
I guess I'm a bit of an exception to the federal parliament. I've always been interested in other cultures and overseas, international affairs and other cultures. It's been my big thing since I was a kid. But yeah, look, I live amongst Muslims. My neighbours are Muslim. I've got a total involvement in the community, and we got a very strong Iraqi Shia presence in Auburn. Turkish, the main Turkish mosque in Sydney is at Auburn. Yeah, I live. My immigration cases most days of the week. I got Muslim constituents, so yeah, I'm fairly close to it locally.
Dave Smith, I'd like to bring you into the conversation here. You're an Anglican priest working in Dulwich Hill, not far from the electorate of Reid, not in, but neighbouring. The sorts of kids who come in through your gym are kids who reflect that diversity. And it strikes me that as often as not, there's probably more similarity between the sort of Muslim and Anglo kids who are coming into your gym than there is to either of the groups who they step apart from.
Yeah, so truth is, most of the kids we work with are black, you know. We have a variety of kids, and certainly plenty of Islamic kids as well as Christian kids and lots of Lebanese kids. And in truth, I work quite closely with the local Islamic sheikh, who's actually a genuinely a good mate of mine. And he's often in the centre with me and, you know, talks with the Islamic kids. And we work together in a lot of stuff. So we don't have any problem at that level at all.
Is there a gym subculture that
I think the gym's a great leveller, absolutely. Yeah. I've been trying to get Sheikh in there to do some boxing with me, but he's such a pacifist that we haven't been able to get that far yet. But, yeah, it is true. And we do have very committed Christian and Islamic kids training side by side and supporting each other. To say in our context, it's just not an issue.
It's back to the bells of St Mary's, really, isn't it, Laurie Ferguson?
I haven't got the analogy, sorry.
The sort of the old Bing Crosby film.
I thought I was forgetting it. I've got to confess, my mother likes Bing Crosby and watches his films, but I haven't watched it, sorry.
Somebody else's experience in this is Fadi Rahman. Fadi, we should explain first that you're not with us in the studio. You're home because you've got an illness in the family with a young child. So thank you for participating on the phone. It's good to have you with us.
No worries. Thank you so much for having me as well.
And congratulations for being nominated as part of the Prime Ministerial elite for the 2020 summit, one of the select 1,000.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm quite excited about being picked one of those in the Muslim community. So it's quite exciting for someone like me to be going to Canberra and representing the young people from my community.
Fadi, what's your observation about sort of Muslim kids in your area and the points that both Laurie and Dave have made about those kids really sharing as much in common with their Australian counterparts as they do their differences?
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't realise that most of these kids are born, raised in Australia, and they're as Australian as you can call them. And what they have in common, like everybody else, I guess you will find that even at my youth centre, that a lot of young people that come through, they're not only from the Islamic faith, they're from a Christian background and also other backgrounds, various backgrounds. And quite interesting, lately I had a big wave of Islander kids come through from the Samoan community and also the Tongan community. So what we see in our youth centre, and our doors are open to everybody around, predominantly Muslim from Lebanese heritage, we find that they have a lot in common. They've been exposed easily to drugs and other sorts of stuff. The internet plays a big role, and cable TV now is an easy access as well. So you find there's a lot in common when it comes to their problems and what they're facing on a daily basis. I guess what the Muslim kids face as an extra is perhaps what happens on the world arena, the international arena. I guess they cop a lot from perhaps you know, certain people, and I guess this is something that they have to learn how to deal with and move right along. And this is exactly what we've been trying to teach them and empower them in the youth centre, and try and make people realise that, you know, we do have a lot in common, more than what they think they do. And quickly, when we run small programs, that you bring the two together, and they find that, you know, gee, we're very similar, almost identical. And I guess the last thing they tend to speak about at this stage would be their faith. You find that they're talking a lot about drugs. Drugs is a big thing in their life, and obviously, like everybody else, in regards to alcohol and all sorts of stuff. And I guess the big downfall in our areas is, I guess, you know, in terms of their families, obviously that's a bit hard on them, because you know, mum and dad not particularly knowing how to speak and write and read English very well. So they do have some sort of disadvantages, you know, from other people. And I guess, you know, this is something we're trying to sort of empower them and get them over the hurdle and bring them up to speed with everybody else in the community. Mm.
Dave, you were nodding your head as Fadi was going through the list of things, almost as if, yes, they were the same. It was the same list.
I think the problems with kids are the same, you know, across the country, I suspect. Yeah. And it's not restricted to any one religious or ethnic group. I think that's important. Mm. You know, I mean, we have, violence issues. It shifts. You know, for a long while, the drugs in our area were associated with the Vietnamese connection and, you know, Cabramatta sort of thing. Then it shifts and all of a sudden you find there's problems with the Indigenous kids and that, but it'll move in a group-like basis. Mm. But it's never restricted to one community, one faith.
Laurie Ferguson, that's something that struck me about watching those Cronulla riots, that in fact what you were getting was two groups in some ways very similar to each other. You know, it was a bit like you could have transplanted West Side Story in a sense. That is, we're dealing with really here a common phenomena of alienation that occurs to any group that's new in a community and feels they are the outsiders, almost for a generation.
But I'd also add that Cronulla, quite frankly, I think one thing that's been left out of this is that my stepkids had the history of going to Cronulla 30 years ago, and I think another element outside of religion in Cronulla, quite frankly, they're hostile to anyone from the western suburbs, full stop. And yes, that's been there for decades. But I think that the real danger we have is the marginalisation of a lot of these people in Western Sydney. And every community that comes to this country tries to succeed. They want their kids to go to school, they want to go to university, they want to make money, etc. And where there's an impediment, where they're blocked out, that's when, unfortunately, people are attracted to extremist kind of philosophies. And Fadi's actually operates in my electorate, and coincidentally I had a meeting with him last week with some police who are very supportive of what he's doing. But I think it's very important that these people are dropping out of the education system, feeling that there's a degree of discrimination against them, that we don't actually force them into alternatives.
Yeah, and I guess to add to Laurie's comments, the one problem that we've been finding that, and I guess the experts have been talking along these lines, and we've been saying it for quite some time now, that we need to engage these kids, because what seems to be happening right now, a lot of our kids are dropping out of school early, and they're all early school leavers. They are engaging in antisocial behaviour and probably starting their criminal life, even to that extent. And what that does is it allows and gives a chance to those people with that ideology, with the extreme ideology, to trap them with the trap, and that's when they fall through the cracks, because we are unable to get to them and we're unable to reach those kids, because usually they're not the ones that go through your normal process of programs and projects which reach young people, and then they end up falling through the cracks, and these people, you know, get them right on the other end, and this is a quite dangerous position that, you know, we find ourselves in. And that's why we need to do a lot of work on the young people. I guess young people are very, very vulnerable. And certain individuals play at their feelings and play at their emotions. And they tend to you know, pinpoint on a few things. And because young people are ignorant, they're not highly educated from our community, they tend to listen to these stupid views. And we find ourselves endangering the whole community, and I guess we all need to put our hands together as a whole community, as an Australian community. I consider myself to be as Australian as anybody else. And I guess what we need to start looking at, not only at the Muslim community and hold the Muslim community responsible, we also need to hold ourselves responsible as an Australian society and as an Australian community that cares about one another. We are just another puzzle of the picture that that puts Australia on the map, and our community needs the support of the outside, which means that the whole community needs to come together and help these kids. They are disadvantaged in many ways, and I guess Father will agree with me that young people are disadvantaged in general. But then when you have young people who are very vulnerable, and you have certain individuals that have gone through, I guess, if you want to call it the security system or whatever it might be, but they do exist in our communities, and they're targeting these kids, and they're grabbing them, and they're working on their emotions and their frustrations, and their, I guess, by them being alienated and marginalised by the wider community, this is really causing us a big headache. And in terms of long terms, we need to really start being really smart and outsmart these certain individuals that exist in the community.
Dave Smith.
Yeah, I think what you're highlighting, Fadi, is the need for our faith communities to work together.
Yes.
I'm not sure which particular extremist type people you're thinking of here, but the Islamic leaders I'm working with are terrific people. And I think, on the whole, we share our values 100% when it comes to issues with youth and drugs and these sorts of things. Our perspectives are identical.
Dave, let me ask another question there. Is there a common strand in gym culture with young kids? That is, kids come into a gym culture and it's almost as though they see the leaders of the gym as almost as a surrogate family. It becomes a surrogate family for them. They're alienated for some reason, ordinary social reasons.
That is totally true. And it does give us the opportunity to sort of become its own peer group with its own set of values if it's led properly. But I don't think we need to break them away from their faith communities either.
No, I'm not suggesting that. I'm just suggesting, is there a certain subgroup of kids like that you would identify with who come into your centre who do generally, whether it's the Muslim, Christian, Hindu, Buddhist or whatever, tend to need to identify with people such as yourself or Fadi or others as almost a substitute family? It becomes a culture in its own right.
Absolutely right, yeah, for sure. Look, we have some kids who I'm always closing down saying, look, mate, you don't have to go home, but you can't sleep here, I'm sorry. They don't seem to have anywhere else to go, and that's every day. And so, that's the fundamental thing we try and do at our place, provide a safe place.
It's interesting, Laurie, that these kids who you describe as the gym culture kids are quite profoundly different from those kids you'd be worried about being radicalised, because many of the ones being radicalised are being radicalised through a university study regime, whether it's a different strand of Islam coming through. They're actually a completely different subgroup.
Yeah, but I still think there are issues here. Quite frankly, the real danger... All right, you're going to have people who are very faith-motivated. They're very into religion. That's their thing. But I think we don't want to underestimate the potential for people to be radicalised who see doors locked to them, aren't particularly religious, quite frankly. I think there's another point. Many of the Muslim kids in my electorate, they might be interested in the Ramadan period, they might go to mosque on important occasions, but I think it's a vision that's not true to think they're totally subsumed by religion. And when they are frustrated, when they are locked out of the system, when their families are marginalised, this can lead to radicalisation. On a very simple level, I can see amongst families that I have known for 20 years a greater take-up of religious fervour and belief in my community in families that basically they have two choices. When they think they're under the hammer, they either walk away from the community or they identify more strongly with it. And that's all right within reason, but if it
goes
further...
And there's almost no choice, is there? Yeah. If you want to retain your integrity as a person, you've got to choose one or the
Absolutely.
Other.
Absolutely, and... So I can see that on a very micro level in my electorate amongst friends. And I just think that the other thing Fadi didn't mention, he's been involved through the immigration department with IBM, coming out there, mentoring young people in his gym, giving them an option in life for employment-wise. I think that's another crucial part of this.
Fadi, you've had some difficulties with the gym too, haven't you? That there's been some difficulties getting approval through local government. You actually lost the centre for a while, didn't you?
Yeah, we actually closed down from last year, December. It would have been a bit of an issue with local council in terms of zoning and so on and so forth. And we're currently in negotiation with council trying to get somewhere because we see it's so crucial to have such centres. Because what you need to do is when you're trying to tell these young people that this is not the right path, this is not the right way to go, you need to provide them with an alternative. Now, if the alternative doesn't exist, they are going to find themselves an alternative. In most cases, it's not a really good one. And that's why we went and visited Miss Laurie Ferguson, and he was nice enough to take it on board, and he assured us that he will be getting on top of it and trying to do as much as he can to help us to make sure that such a centre as ours do exist in the community. And I guess it's really important to have these centres, and as Mr Ferguson have mentioned, we do run projects with IBM, with the Department of Immigration and Citizenships, where it empowers young people and it shows them a better way. We provide them that, because I know the young kids want a better way out, but unfortunately sometimes they can't see it, and by them being young and vulnerable, they tend to make the wrong choices. And I mean, hey, I was young at once and I used to make the wrong choices, and unless you have someone who's there to monitor you and to mentor you and to make sure that you're on the straight and narrow, and to give you a better option, you're going to find someone else who's going to come and, as I mentioned before, play out their feelings and out their emotions and frustrations. And what brings to mind is one of the alleged terrorists in Melbourne. I was speaking to one of the reporters probably about 2 weeks ago, and she asked me the question and said, Fadi, I guess the million-dollar question here, and if you can make a comment on it, is how in the world one of those guys who was as Aussie as he can get him, he was playing footy, you know, to attend all the football games, everything was just, he was as just as Aussie, and then it was just almost overnight where he just totally turned around and all, and he got arrested as an alleged terrorist. And I guess, you know, as Mr. Ferguson said, that there's always a potential for something to happen like that, and that's why we got to be very careful. And we got to start engaging these young people and accepting them in our community. And if the young people don't want to take a step towards us, we must take a step towards them and say, hey, guys, we're here to make your life a little bit easier. Because it's not easy, let's face it, it's not easy for a young person to deal with his own problems as it is, you know, with all the sorts of information that's been thrown at him, the drugs, all sorts of problems that he runs into. And then on top of all that, he has to also carry an identity that if something even happens overseas, he must respond to it, he must
yes.
Pay for it. And this is totally wrong. There's enough pressures on young people as it is. And the last thing we want to do is put more on them. We need to have organisations such as ourselves, and I'm not ringing my own bell, but they are in dying need for these young people. And they used to come to my organisation and to the youth centre. It was an exact setup as PCYC, where they used to feel like they were home. They needed a family. They needed a replacement of what they were missing, whether it was a home, whether it was at school. But there was always something missing that they needed, and we provided that at the youth centre. And that's why it's quite important to leave organisations such as ourselves in the community, being in partner up with the federal and local government, and also with other big corporates. And let's make the difference and show the young people that there is a better way. And that's when you'll actually disarm these people with these stupid ideologies. And even if they were to come and preach from here till D-Day to these young kids, aren't going to listen to them. And they're going to tell them, buddy, mate, I've heard it all. I don't want to know about it, because they know there is a better way and there's a bit of an option.
You're on Sunday night on ABC Radio Around Australia. John Cleary with you. My guests are the Parliamentary Secretary for Multicultural Affairs, Laurie Ferguson, Fadi Rahman, and Father Dave Smith. If you'd like to give us a call, 1300 800 222, 1300 800 222. Young people in our community, particularly those exposed and vulnerable in our community, are the business of Dave Smith and Fadi Rahman. Laurie Ferguson, looking at from the perspective of, particularly tonight, young Muslims in the community and the way on occasions they're alienated and isolated, then what we need to do to support them. Laurie, you can give us a ring, 1300 800 222, 1300 800 222. Call now, 1300 800 222, if you'd like to participate in the program. Laurie Ferguson, Fadi mentioned the difficulties he had with his centre and the fact that you were helping him out. Was part of the difficulty there what I referred to earlier in the introduction as the NIMBY factor? Here you've got a federal government taking one line, state government's trying to help, yet groups like this run into problems at the local level. The local government hasn't yet got the levers to manoeuvre quickly enough.
I'm sorry to be at variance with you, and Fadi and I discussed this last week because I saw the film at the Sydney Film Festival. And I think, unfortunately, the film didn't convey a bit of the truth. You wouldn't know from that film, for instance, that 5 of the 12 aldermen in Auburn are Muslims. It gave, a perspective that perhaps there was anti-Islamic thought behind the council's actions. I think we are faced with a few realities in life that sometimes there are planning laws. And the audience at the Sydney Film Festival, who all live in Balmain and Leichhardt, they are hugely clapping the film. But if I tried to run that centre for more than 5 minutes in Leichhardt Council, it would be closed down. Look, I'm supportive of the organisation. I think they're really necessary. I hope that we can work it through and find a suitable venue. But I think, as I say, the film was a bit misleading, quite frankly.
We're talking about Tom Zabriskie's film there, which highlighted some of the difficulties that that Fadi was facing at his centre. Nevertheless, if you go out to Camden, you can't deny that there are still sort of NIMBY problems around.
Absolutely.
And that part of your job is to actually address Australians in this regard, surely.
Absolutely. I'm just arguing about the specific.
Yeah.
Obviously, The Islamic community in this country faces incredible bigotry. All new arrival communities have endured this over decades, but it's heightened by the realities of international affairs and also heightened by massive concentrations of the community in certain limited areas with no knowledge virtually outside those areas.
Is there a failure of successive governments here in failing to realise, even after the Vietnamese experience, that when you bring a different religion into the country, you are actually bringing in people who are going to have even more difficulties than those who were associated with the old European cultures, whether they be Greek or Italian or whether or the Irish, no matter how far you go back. Once you bring in a different religious community, it's not saying you shouldn't, but you do need to recognise that you will have and face particular difficulties. And that's been even more so the case with Islam, particularly over the last 20 years, because of the difficulties it's faced with fundamentalism.
Oh, absolutely, but I've had access to some surveys taken in 96 around the questions of immigration. It's quite interesting, the emphasis at that stage was anti-Asian even then. I just think that whilst we should be prepared, whilst we should acknowledge these problems are going to arise, without the international surrounding circumstances, this would not have been anywhere near as intense. Yeah. I think it is a peculiar situation.
Yeah. You're on Sunday Night on ABC Radio. We're going to take your calls in a moment. Just one other question before we do take some calls. We mentioned in the background to this discussion the sort of various ideologies that young people are subject to and the way they're sort of vulnerable, can be vulnerable to any sort of religious group if they're feeling alienated and vulnerable. In the case of, in your electorate, I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong again, that the old premises that Fadi had have been taken over by a group that has a particular ideology.
Well, Fadi told me this last week. I wasn't up to date with the actual fact they'd been put out of the building and that some Christian religious group had come in there. If it was to be the case that they were doing roughly the same things outside of planning laws, I'd be very concerned. I just don't know at this stage what they're doing in that same building.
You're on Sunday Night on ABC Radio around Australia.
The netball competition goes trans-Tasman this year
as five Aussie teams take on five of New Zealand's finest. On Monday, it's the New South Wales Swifts against the Southern Steel. The Steel are a tough new team from the deep south of Kiwiland. If you want to be courtside at the first Sydney game of the season, then stay tuned to Adam Spencer for the chance to win a double pass on 702 ABC Sydney.
Sunday Night with John Cleary.
And our guests on Sunday Night, Laurie Ferguson, Parliamentary Secretary for Multicultural Affairs and Settlement Services, also Father Dave Smith, the fighting father from Dulwich Hill, and Fadi Rahman. Fadi named as one of the members of the 2020 summit today. Let's take some calls from Amani in Sydney. She's a Muslim teenager. Amani, welcome to you. It's good to have you with us. What would you like to say?
Yeah, I just wanted to say I'm a Muslim teenager from Sydney, and I go to a school with almost like my friends are Christians and stuff, and it kind of gets confusing because we're at home, like my parents teach me about like Islam and like, you know, what path I should choose and all that stuff. And when I go to school, it's like I'm influenced by, like, you know, wanting to go out, have fun, getting, like, drunk and parties. And it's kind of, like, it gets confusing. And I think, like, a lot of teenagers, Muslim teenagers, get confused and, like, don't know, like, what way, like, what to follow, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And, well, Fadi, that would be a common experience for you, talking with kids?
Yeah, it is, definitely. I totally understand. I guess I've been through it myself, and, you know, I used to go home and my parents used to preach one thing to me, and then I used to go out and see my friends, and obviously my friends were, you know, Anglo-Australians, the majority of them, because I was raised in an area that was called Mount Druitt, which predominantly was Anglo-Australians. And I was, you know, the peer pressure's there. What do I do? You know, do I drink? Don't I drink? Mum and Dad's telling me this, and this is against my religion. But I guess what we need, and that's why we need more organisations such as ourselves, where we can come in the middle of it and say, look, although you might not be allowed to drink and it's against your religion, but it doesn't mean that you don't have anything in common, and it doesn't mean you can't be friend an Anglo who might happen to drink. This is choices. There's a lot of Anglo people who don't drink. There's a lot of people from various backgrounds that don't drink, that choose not to go to the local pub. And there's a lot that do, even Muslim individuals. We need to have a support base for these young people. These young people are quite confused. They don't know who to turn to. They don't know where to go. And most often, they tend to make the wrong choices and get themselves in all sorts of trouble. And this is when mum and dad start clamping down on them and start saying to them that, look, you can't go out, you can't do anything, you can't see your friends. And that's when this ideology comes in, where mum and dad starts telling them not to befriend anyone from a different religious background. You're only allowed to hang out with those who are Muslims. And I guess the parents themselves don't know how to deal with it, and there is no support base for the parents, let alone for the kids. And you're going to find yourself, a lot of the kids are going to get themselves in a lot of trouble and are going to be as confused as the young girl on the telephone. And we need organisations to support it, as I said from before, where you can tell the young people that, look, you guys are all right, it's fine, don't stress out, don't panic too much. You can choose not to drink because that's your choice, but you can still be friends with these individuals because they shouldn't be influencing you to do anything wrong. And you should have a choice instead of being peer pressured into doing something that you don't want to do.
Amani, do you have friends you can talk to?
Yeah, I've got a lot of friends I can talk to, but it's just, I don't know, you just feel so, like, outcast and you don't belong.
Mm.
And, like, yeah, it's really hard. Like, they don't peer pressure you, but, like, you want to fit in. And, like, I know, you know, we try our best not to do, like, the wrong things, but because we're just so, like, confused, and you just, you know, end up finding yourself on the wrong path.
It almost comes that you have to prove yourself to everybody else.
Could I just say that whilst I understand Amani's problems, I think we've equally got if not a more disturbing pattern on the other side of the debate, quite frankly. I think that there's a danger of some people living in very narrow communities, whether it's Islamic or extreme Christian, etc., and actually not having the challenges that Amani is having early in life, that they get into a very narrow circle of people. When they go out into the wider society later on, they're going to be far more challenged as not having had the experience Amani's had.
Yes, I think Dave was nodding there with what Amani was saying, as though you can see it from the Christian side as well, the same path for a lot of Christian
exactly.
kids.
This is not a unique problem to any specific culture or religious group. I mean, it comes out of parenting styles as well.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, most of us want to convince our kids not to go out and get drunk, but most of the kids we'll find will do it anyway. Yeah. I mean,
what would you say to Amani, Dave, about just finding a good group of kids you can sort of talk to? And
look, I think one factor that's worth taking into consideration, I think on the whole, the kids who are part of what's termed authoritative communities tend to do better in terms of crime rates, in terms of not going off the rails and the rest of it. I think, you know, there's a temptation here to sort of downplay the role of religious communities, I think, and to say, well, the youth centre can be a sort of alternative authority. I'm cautious about that. As I say, I think having a strong faith community behind you, or even a strong political group you're a part of, or other things that have a well-defined set of values.
It's a group that you can kick ideas around with, really, isn't it? You can test yourself with.
Well, if it's providing a bridge, yes, between some of the different influences, then that's a very positive thing, potentially.
Amani, thanks for your call.
Thanks. I just had one more question to ask Fadi. Fadi, I was just wondering, how did you have you ever been in a situation where you were had racist comments about your beard? Because I've been when I walk around in shopping malls and stuff, and because I recently wore the scarf, I've been getting negative comments and stuff saying, "Oh, you effing terrorist, go back to your country." Mm. How did you deal with it? Because I don't know how to deal with that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, look, I still face it, believe it or not, I still face it up till now, where people make racist comments. I guess you got to be strong at heart, and you got to understand that people are ignorant and don't know you, and they choose not to know you. And I guess the way you can sort of put it behind you is you must take that step where you get involved in work like the work that I do, and prove everybody wrong and show them that you're not a terrorist. I'm someone who's willing to contribute to this society of ours, and I'm someone who's going to prove everybody wrong, and I'm just as equal as everybody else. So you got to be really positive about everything, and I know it's hard, it's hurtful. I mean, it came to times where I used to go back home and think to myself, hey, what's the point? You know, everything that I do, and I'm still getting belted by certain individuals. But you must understand that just like in any other community, in any other society, there's going to be always people who are going to be saying stupid things, and they're going to be the rotten ones. And I guess Australian society is no less than any other society. You're going to have these individuals. Be very positive and get involved in something that's positive and prove people wrong. This is what I've been doing.
Armani, thanks for your call very much.
Thank you.
Let's go to Graham in Sydney. Hi, Graham. Welcome to you. What would you like to say?
Hello, John. It's Graham Curl from Wesley Mission.
Ah, Wesley Mission. Yes,
yeah,
Graham. Hi.
I'm just speaking on Wesley Mission's behalf, but long before Davey Smith was out at in the inner west in Sydney, he was out at St Luke's at Miranda. How are you, Dave?
Good to hear your voice, bro.
Good on you, mate. Listen, look, I just wanted to ring up about... the Cronulla riots and so on, because I worked as a youth worker down there in the 80s, and I think overall it was probably a youth problem with racist overtones rather than a racist problem with youth undertones, if you like. But I still think, you know, the big problem in the area down the Shire is alcohol, and it still remains one of the key concerns, not only here, but if you go to any one of these coastal suburbs, you know, the northern beaches of Sydney have had huge problems with alcohol and other drugs and so on. If you go to the west coast of the surf coast down in Victoria, if you go to Cottesloe and Scarborough in Western Australia, if you go down to Victor Harbour in South Australia, they've all got this alcohol problem that's related to, you know, territory, lifestyle, all that sort of thing. But look, you know, the problem still remains down our way. If you had a look at one of the weekend papers, either last weekend or the weekend before, there was a couple of locations in the Shire, Northies and somewhere else that I think up at Sutherland, a location at Sutherland, were rated in the top 10 for, you know, assaults and, you know, problems and so on that... happen when people get tanked up, and it rated in the top 10 in New South Wales. So look, you know, all I want to say is that, you know, we really need to have a national debate about alcohol and the use of alcohol, and it's not just you know, here in Sydney. It really is a national problem overall.
Graham, thanks for your call. Laurie Ferguson, you were nodding there. Not quite your bailiwick, but something that sort of impinges on it.
I was just thinking to myself something quite different. I noticed that Parramatta, where I live, is also in the top problem areas, and I thought it was quite interesting that one state politician chose to emphasise Aboriginal areas, quite frankly, despite those coastal and Parramatta ones. But look, I also am worried about the alcohol situation. I remember when I was going to university and that, about 10 o'clock at night, you had to really work hard to get a drink. These days, 24 hours a day, easy availability. You go from one bar to another bar, and I just think there is a correlation between violence in the street and proliferation of alcohol 24 hours a day. Yeah, it's a major issue.
Dave?
I mean, alcohol is only exacerbating issues that are already there. Yeah. I mean, we don't want to downplay the significance. I think particularly for the Islamic community here, there are real issues of prejudice and which are fueled by ignorance, you know, the alcohol may accelerate the whole thing, you know, but the problem is still there.
Yeah.
Graham Cole, thanks for your call. We'll move on to Jim in Cabramatta. Hello, Jim. Welcome to you.
Hello. Thank you. Yes, I've been listening, and, you know, with Australians like Fardy, it makes me think that the Islamic young ones need to have Australian-trained imams.
Well, that's an issue that Laurie Ferguson, the Muslim Reference Group, initially dealt with under the John Howard regime, and it was something that proved a little more difficult than at first glimpse.
Well, I think that is a step in the right direction. I think one of the things we've got to understand, one of the difficulties Islam faces is that, unlike in the Catholic Church where Mr. Pell kind of basically lays down the law or the Pope, there's no central control in Islam. There's independent operations. Each mosque runs its own situation, each school. But certainly, I think that getting Australian-trained imams is a step in the right direction, so they're aware of our culture, our nuances. I had approaches in the last fortnight from five Turkish mosques with the idea also that Turkish imams, who are essentially public servants, by the way, of Turkey, when they come to Australia, that they maybe get visas a year earlier to actually undertake English training and cultural nuances. So, yes, look, there's no doubt that when imams don't have an association with this country, our culture, our communities, etc., there's exacerbated problems. So,
yes, Amani talked about the confusion in her own peer group. Well, I think, you know, with the leader should be a go-between, you know, between Australian culture and Islamic life in Australia. And that's all I have to say.
Well, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
You're on Sunday night on ABC Radio around Australia. Dennis in Melbourne is on the line. Dennis, hi, welcome to you. How are you doing?
Oh, g'day, John, and g'day, Fardy. We saw each other with Laurie in Canberra last year, you'll recall, at the Muslims and Non-Muslims in Australia conference.
Oh, yeah. How you going, mate?
How you going, pal?
Not too bad.
Well, listen, I just want to run over sort of a larger picture here. As you know, I have a soft spot for traditional Australia, and I think a predominantly white, Anglo-European Australia, call it what you will, is what makes this country great, is what it makes it attractive to a lot of people who come from places that are a whole lot more divisive and therefore fractious and sources of refugees to this country. Now, we can't solve the world's problems, but one of the real underlying factors in all this is that majority non-European immigration is starting to sink in to the Anglo-white Australian traditional majority, and they're seeing their numbers fall. At the same time, they can see all sorts of ugly stuff coming from the other side of the world in terms of various ethnic fights, and it doesn't matter whether it's Iraq or some part of Africa, wherever it is, where communal groups start trying to vie for a slice of the social pie with big numbers behind them, you get problems. And our immigration program at the moment is majority non-European.
Well, that's a good point to invite Laurie Ferguson to respond. A couple of issues there that Dennis has raised, Laurie.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it'd be a very nice world where the refugees all came from happy countries and all had PhDs and all had $1 million. The reality is that refugees are about conflict, about persecution, about rape and about living in camps for a decade. And quite frankly, we have, on both sides of politics, had a non-selective, non-discriminatory refugee intake. The reality is that the other part of the intake now that's very strong, of course, is the skills intake. There's a strong emphasis on English in regards to requisites. I think, once again, if somebody from India or China has the skills and they have the English qualifications, I don't think I don't think there's anything wrong with that. The nice dreams of the 19th century, where everyone would come from Edinburgh and Liverpool, and that they'd be the only people that would want to come to this country, or were the only people interested, is long gone. And
But we didn't like them if they were from the east end of London. We tried to lock them out.
I think that's the other point. The other person has said that we've got crisis and people are starting to wake up to things. These things wax and wane. They're related to international events. They're related to unemployment levels in this country. And the same things that have been said about this current community, it was said on about the Italians after the Second World War. It's a constantly repeating reality from some rhetoric on the extreme edge of the immigration debate.
Fardy, do you have a brief response?
Mate, Dennis is always up to his old tricks, as usual. Mr Ferguson had put it, we would love to, live in this fantasy world where everyone's perfect, but unfortunately no one's perfect, and I guess just like how I've got faults, everybody else has got faults. And what we must start learning as Australians, Australia does not belong to a certain individual group of people. What makes Australia beautiful and why I am so proud to be Australian is the fact that our flag is able to, under its banner, to put all these people, regardless of what their religious background or their a heritage background.
Good.
I'm proud to be Australian because of the fact that we are multicultural Australia, and people have to start getting this through their head.
We'll move on. Thanks, Dennis, for your call. Let's say hi to Noel in Wollongong. Hello, Noel.
Hello, John and friends. I'm a very old man, but I believe that, I accept everybody as long as they become good Australians.
And what's your definition of a good Australian, I guess?
Well, we don't want class distinctions, and we don't want religious, you know, the way people can be stirred up by religions. Now, I'm a great believer in the public school system because it caters for everyone, and it teaches them to live together and realise that we're all the same under the skin. Now, in Wollongong, there's 90 different nationalities. Now, imagine that each nationality had its own school. What a problem it would be.
Education is a critical issue, Laurie Ferguson. It's not your portfolio, but it impinges on it in an extraordinarily powerful way.
Well, I think this refers back to a comment I made when that young girl was on earlier.
Armani.
She's reflecting the problem of going to a school where there's diversity. I actually think that a bigger danger in this country is children going to schools where there's no diversity. Mm. And if we don't have a strong public education system, if we don't have a lot of interfaith work among schools that are religious, I think it's a real recipe for a tribalisation, quite frankly, and I think it is a danger.
Dave Smith, you're nodding your head at that.
No, absolutely. The idea is sort of building unity through uniformity is, we haven't opted for that. The whole concept of multiculturalism is we're trying to embrace diversity, and there's ways of doing that. I think, and as much as I want to respect where Laurie's coming from, trying to do it from the political end, we've got to take responsibility for doing it from the other end too, from the grassroots up. I think prejudices on the whole aren't that hard to break down if you actually start to make contact with people from other cultural and religious groups. I mean,
school's an important part.
School's an important part, but I mean, look, very simply, our church community next week, we're having lunch with the local Islamic community. You know, with this about the third or fourth time we've done that, I think the Hindu temple guys are going to join us as well for a picnic, you know. Now, you'd be amazed what changes that just makes at the grassroots, just getting people to make contact with each other and talk and share food together, just simple things, you know.
Mm. We've only got about a minute or so to go. Fadi Rahman, just a final comment from you.
Mate, last thing that I would like to say is in terms of the wider community, and I call the Australian community as my community, as Father just said, that we need to sort of take that step towards the Islamic community, especially the young community, because it is the majority of the Muslim community. People need to start realising that these kids are born, raised in Australia, and they are Australian just like everybody else, and we need to stop marginalising these kids and alienating them, because that's only going to ruin our beautiful country in the long run.
Laurie Ferguson, a challenging portfolio.
Oh, yes, but it's one that's interesting. I think one of the messages I have to get across to the electorate is that this community, as I stress, is diverse. It is predominantly Australian. I say Australian in the sense of being born here. I hope that we can actually make sure that by the people we appoint to boards, by the people we promote in our society, the wider community gets a better perspective on Islam being a very diverse, wide group, not just a narrow group of people.
Laurie Ferguson, Parliamentary Secretary for Multicultural Affairs and Settlement Services. Father Dave Smith, the Fighting Father from Dulwich Hill, Holy Trinity Church. And Fadi Rahman, thank you all for joining us on Sunday night. Been great of you to give us the time. Thanks so much. We'll be back after the news on Sunday night with another one of Kevin Rudd's elect, Elizabeth Cham of Philanthropy Australia.